This is Trends and Issues in Instructional Design, Educational Technology, and Learning Science, hosted by Abby Brown and Tim Green.
Hi, this is Tim, and I'm here with Abby.
Hi, this is Abby, and I'm here with Tim.
Welcome to episode 85 of our podcast, where we review the trends and issues in instructional design, educational technology, and learning sciences that we observed as we flipped resources into our Flipboard magazine. In this episode, we have two major trends that we will discuss and a few what we're calling emerging trends. We'll also share some recommended readings that go along with the trends and emerging trends. And then we end, as we normally do, by making predictions as we peer into the crystal ball. So, Abby, start us out by talking first about our two major trends and then our emerging trends.
Thank you, Tim. Yes, we have, as you said, two trends that we've seen in the past holding pretty steady. Online learning was the major trend. I just did a simple count I told you about this earlier, quick count of all the articles that we flipped in the last 2 weeks, and online learning was the largest number of articles that were flipped into Flipboard. And it was a variety. MOOCs were mentioned, arguments for and against for-profit and non-profit online offerings, how-tos, which were instructions on how to improve online instruction, and included with that the incorporation of social media into online instruction. So there were a number of a wide variety of topics covered. We're going to recommend the following reading: The 5 Stages of Digital Readiness for Adult Online Students by Laura Ascione for eCampus News, with apologies if we've mispronounced any names. This was a pretty good article. There were a number of good articles this week. This was a good article that was that describes the different levels of digital readiness adult learners need to achieve to do well in an online learning environment. And it's kind of an important look, because I think it's easy to overlook some of the necessary skills that one should have to thrive while taking courses online. The next trend that we saw was virtual reality and augmented reality, which, as we've mentioned ad nauseum at this point, that for well over a year and a half, that VR and AR are a big deal for educational technology experts. There was a significant shift in the past 2 weeks in terms of the focus of the articles. There was a much greater focus on educational applications of virtual reality and augmented reality. And I mean, really seriously, as you and I were talking before, Tim, major shifts, so that we had very few articles about just the software or the hardware, and a good many articles just about how to apply the software and the hardware in instructional settings. Here's our recommended reading: 8 of the Best Web Tools for Taking Students on Virtual Field Trips. This appeared in Educational Technology and Mobile Learning. We could not find an author. This is not a terribly surprising list if anybody is familiar with virtual field trips. I would say probably at least 5 of the 8 are going to be kind of kind of moments for people saying, yes, I'm familiar with that. But it is a very solid and commendable list, and good descriptions of the advantages and challenges with each of the 8 options. So those are our two trends. Now, again, you mentioned emerging trends at the beginning of the podcast, Tim. We saw what we think of as being 3 emerging trends. That is, they got 2 or 3 flips into our Flipboard magazine, but they were kind of critically important flips. The first one is Open Educational Resources, or OER. There were the articles that we're seeing are not actually about how to produce OER or how to implement it, but we're seeing greater support for OER. So the state of Washington endorses OER. The federal government for months has been endorsing the application of OER. And of course, there are some companies, well, organizations such as universities and in some cases publishing companies that are looking to codify and produce OER. And I think, Tim, your own state, California.
Yeah, our entire Cal State university system has been talking about OER for several years now, but just came out with a push to, and I think you and I are talking about this, it's a suggestion on using OER.
It's a suggestion. It's saying think about using OER. Keep OER uppermost in your thoughts as you're designing instruction.
Yeah. So considering how many campuses, 20 plus, that's a big system to think about OER.
Now, full disclosure, Tim, you and I have a book coming out that's about open educational resources.
Yes, we do. I believe that comes out in July of this year for Routledge.
It does, and it's about new media and open educational resources, and it's about the basics of production. So we're not. It's not an advocate or non-advocate book. It's a how-to on how to make things. But we do need to mention that because I think if we are discussing our view, people need to know that we have a bit of a horse in the race. The next emerging trend that we saw was security, and we're coupling this with net neutrality. That is, net neutrality is not necessarily an issue of security as much as it is an issue of disclosure of the items that user data, I guess, is part of that larger issue. And the largest issue with net neutrality, though, is the idea that keeping an open playing field so that no single or group of companies can dominate the bandwidth cycles on the internet. It's been a hot topic because things have come out reversing some earlier decisions from the federal government, and it's going to be a hotter topic as constituencies begin to press their arguments for or against the current decisions. The final emerging trend that we saw, which was, I thought, particularly interesting. It came out of left field, I think, for both of us, right, Tim?
It did, and we haven't seen this for quite a while.
Quite a while. We're calling it, for lack of a better term, we're referring to it as learning hacks. That is, it's pop psychology reporting about how to learn better. So we saw a number of articles that we flipped into the Flipboard magazine this past couple of weeks that were just about things like, if you want to improve your memory for this type of activity, try this. That kind of thing. And so they were good. They were research-based. They were interesting. I don't see anything wrong with any of the articles. It just was interesting that there were so many. And by so many, we mean three or four. We're not talking about an avalanche of articles. But that's many more than we usually see. So we're calling that an emerging trend, and we're hopeful that that might be a continuing trend. We do have a sort of random recommended reading that goes along with our emerging trends. This doesn't really connect to any of them, but it was such an interesting phenomenon that even though it's not itself a trend, it's sort of a trend of one, just a single story. We think that educational technology folks such as ourselves are going to be very interested in reading something like this. The article is called $1 Million Teachers Cashing In by Selling Their Lessons. This is by Carolyn Thompson for Associated Press. And the article is basically about it's focused heavily on the website Teachers Pay Teachers and the idea of teachers selling to other teachers lesson plans and instructional ideas and activities. And it has engendered quite a discussion for and against in the education community. There is if you look at the largest possible spectrum, there's a fairly strong encampment at one end of the spectrum that says this is not a good idea. This is teachers not sharing with each other openly their work. And there are some copyright questions that people raise. Who actually owns the lesson plan that you develop if you're doing it on a school district's time? On the other end of the spectrum, you have people who are radically excited about this because this is a financial opportunity for educators who are not typically met with multiple numbers of financial opportunities. This is an opportunity to make the profession a potentially high-paying profession. So it's kind of all over the place, but it's well worth the read. It's a very balanced article, and we recommend that. Those are our trends, our emerging trends, our readings for the past 2 weeks, Tim.
Okay, thanks, Abby. So now let's move into the crystal ball and peering into it and making predictions for the upcoming next 2 weeks. So I believe we have four predictions that we're making. So what are those, Abby?
Well, two of them are very, very safe. Online teaching and learning has been a major trend for months, if not years at this point. VR and AR has been a major trend for literally years at this point, although we definitely see a tapering off on VR and AR. Virtual reality and augmented reality are becoming more focused topics, and we're seeing more focus on the educational applications, but fewer articles overall. So perhaps we're seeing the balance come out there. Safety and security, Tim, you and I agree that safety and security are going to be big issues in the next couple of months. They've been issues for quite a while for the general public, for the consuming public, and for teachers and school organizations. We don't think that's going to go away anytime soon, and so we're going to continue to see articles about that. The next one is open educational resources. As we mentioned, it was an emerging topic this last couple of weeks. We've been predicting the emergence of open educational resources for quite some time. And as we mentioned in a previous episode, it never quite gelled. What you and I see happening now, though, is the potential for more articles to come out arguing for and against open educational resources. Here's the problem that Tim, you don't mind my speaking for both of us, the problem that people like Tim and myself have with this. Open educational resources is a great idea, but you have to understand its limitations. There's a famous aphorism about production. That is, you can have something fast, good, cheap, but you can only pick two of those things. If you make it fast and good, it's not going to be cheap. If you make it cheap and fast, it's not going to be good. So and if you make it cheap and good, it's not going to be fast. So these are the problems that you face. So what we suspect is that not everybody has thought about these problems just yet. OER does not solve the problem of a high-cost textbook. A high-cost textbook is the result, typically, of a lot of production work, a lot of content expertise that's been hired and paid for, and a lot of marketing to get it out there to people. So it's high cost because there was a lot of resource put into it. You can create something fairly quick in an open educational resource setting, but the question is how good is it? You know, what's the quality? And so I think you and I agree, we're going to see some argument back and forth as to what the proper use of open educational resources is. Those are our crystal ball predictions, Tim.
Okay, well, that brings us to the conclusion of episode 85 of our podcast. We'd like to thank our followers and viewers of our Flipboard magazine and our podcast subscribers. To listen to past episodes of our podcast and find the links to the articles that we mentioned, you can visit our website at trendsandissues.com. Our next episode will air on April 27th.
This podcast is produced by Professor Abby Brown at East Carolina University and Professor Tim Green at California State University, Fullerton. Copyright Abby Brown and Tim Green.